kind of mode as opposed to your charity and such. But yeah, I'm going on and on. But I don't know what I'd do if I had a lot of money.
So I'm going to read it for easy. 53 years old, financier. Victor Vescovo, in 2019, August 24. He decided he wants to go about 18,208 feet deep in the Mali Deep, that's the region. There was another Challenger. Then this time it was called Challenger Deep at southern end of the Pacific Ocean Mariana Trench. So he went there. He was there for a few hours and he came back. So that's how the people pleasure themselves. Well, if he was a geologist, geophysicist, I would understand that. Imagine that you have eight metric ton per square centimeter pressure on you. Back to you.
Well, what can I tell you? I certainly wouldn't spend my money on that, but if I was James Cameron, I probably would. It depends who you are and what you care about. James Cameron, very successful, by the way, with his second Avatar movie. I wouldn't doubt James Cameron if I was anyone. He seems to consistently succeed wherever he goes, but he's a pain in the ass to work for, is my understanding. He's very obsessive compulsive. Yeah, each to their own. As long as this guy doesn't ask me to pay any of his bills, if that's how he wants to spend his money, then so be it. It certainly wouldn't be the first 5 billion things that I would think of.
Okay, the next one is sonic and ultrasonic weaponry. Veritasium made the video. In 1950s, some engineer made the story that it would be good. So that was before the Reagan Wars, war program, right? It would be good if we drop something down and we can make a lot of damage. So then later on they find out that they could use a tungsten, because tungsten is the most temperature withholding material on the earth, metal on the earth. And if you have a rod of tungsten, you can drop it and actually make it deep into the bunker of some enemy. Do you remember I sent you the link to that video?
AC Tucci, yes, I remember it distinctly. Tungsten is a real fun element. I have a cube of it. It's heavy as heck. It's about approximately has the same, close to the same density as gold has. It's heavier than lead. As you mentioned, it has the highest melting point of metal. So it will be mechanically stable at high temperatures as it plummets down to the ground. And the trick that they felt they wanted to do was you get a lot of potential energy by lifting it very high with some kind of aeronautic device, and then somehow you drop it, and before it gets to its terminal velocity, it stores a lot of potential energy and works like a bomb. The only problem with the Veritas experiment is they couldn't really afford to have it go too high, and also they were using helicopters, but also they hadn't considered the aerodynamics of the structure, and instead of putting fins and loading up the weight towards the front, they just had a bar of steel, because the tungsten would be a bit more expensive than they had in mind. And the problem with that is these things tumble, and also the air will kind of push them in one direction or another to a degree, so they're very difficult to aim. Now, theoretically, if they designed it more you know, closer to a regular missile where it has fins at the back and it's top front heavy, it probably would do a lot less tumbling and be a little bit more accurate. But it's always a problem. These are passive devices. They have no internal propulsion system, so they just fall wherever they fall.
Tuan?
Yes, Paul.
Quick thing about the tungsten. We used to have these little tungsten rods and put them in the heliox machines for welding. The idea was not to burn up the tungsten. In other words, all you wanted to do was apply the heat to the joint, and then you would have a separate filler rod, and you would apply that. So the reason they use tungsten, of course, is like what you said, it's got a super high melting point, and it's pretty hard to, you have to work at it to foul the end of it. And when you do, you take it, you grind it down to a point again, and you start all over again, no problem. And they tend to last forever. But, very high melting point. Back to you.
Yeah, it's a real fun element. I tend to collect elements. I get the little cubes. there's a place in the Midwest that makes some of them. Others I have to get from China for some strange reason. They don't make them here. But, you know, tungsten is one of my more favorite cubes that I have on my desk, and they are incredibly heavy. I have a piece of magnesium of the same dimension, and they almost look identical. And then you pick one up, and you notice the incredible difference.
Yeah, okay. And it just wasn't pure tungsten. They added 2% thorium. You know, they wanted to make it somewhat of an alloy of it, make it less brittle.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to know. I think I heard Jim out there.
What size cubes do you collect, Roy? That's an interesting little collection.
They're 1-inch cubes, and I have little plastic containers that the place in the Midwest they probably buy it from China. Who else? So they're displayed in a veneer of plastic, transparent plastic, but they're 1-inch cubes.
That's awesome. I like that. I might be looking into that. Back to that.
Yeah, I mean, you can check it out. Amazon has a good selection, and eBay also has a good selection. All kinds of interesting materials. If you're inclined in semiconductors, you can get a cube. I have a cube of carbon. There are cubes of germanium, and I have a cube of silicon. All kinds of fun stuff. I mean, a little esoteric, I guess. Not everyone really cares, but I don't know. I find it a fascinating way thing to collect for myself. It's much better than matchbooks.
Real is a thing.
KE2ALD.
Yes, ALD.
Ivan here. I have a question. I have a pipe. It's not a cube. It's a pyramid from a material known as shungite from a Siberian meteor, and it basically is a it's carbon, but the molecular structure, atomic structure, is very unique. The way the atoms are aligned in that carbon, and apparently they have a very, that material has very unique properties in terms of absorbing or deflecting magnetic radio frequencies and like microwaves and everything else. Are you familiar with shungite?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Apparently there's some kind of crystal healing pseudoscience involved in the 5G conspiracy. You know, people are kind of using it to ward off 5G radiation in their vicinity. But, you know, there are many kinds of unique structures of common elements that we find in meteorites simply because the formation environment needs to be kind of not consistent with Earth as we know it. So every so often something will drop from the sky in new and interesting forms. There was some belief at one point or another that Damascus steel was basically a product of iron meteorites that had specially formed that way. Not quite the same as the shungite, but yeah, I am vaguely familiar with shungite.
Oh, good. I haven't heard about any 5G conspiracy in terms of that shungite thing, but good to know. I was just experimenting with it, do some electrical testing, and it has continuity, and it has a jump in resistance. I mean, the resistance of this thing is just insane. It's just the amplitude, it keeps jumping from 0 to 60 on my pyramid, and it's just funny. I mean, it's just maybe that's because of that molecular alignment, but it's an interesting little thing. Just to know it's technically over.
Yeah, I mean, it's been known historically. I think back in the 18th century, they used this for black pigment in paint. Apparently, they called it carbon black or shungite natural black. So it's been known of for many years now.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Thank you.
You're welcome, Ivan. Getting back to you, Wesley.
Okay, so we're talking about weaponry. But before that, so Veritasium, 14 million of subscribers in YouTube, if I remember correctly. He took the airplane. He lifted with the chopper at the distance of 500 meters, which is 1,500 feet, 1,100 kilograms, that would be 2,000 pounds, 200 pounds, right, 200 pounds, and he made the first mistake. He suspended that weight with the rope. Now, in Ukraine, they have a very small drones, very tiny, tiny drones, like almost amateur drones, and they are able to pinpoint drop grenades to the Russian forces trying to invade Ukraine, killing single soldiers if they need that. What they do is, they don't drop it, they don't suspend it on the rope. It's firmly attached to the drone and it's released. So Veritasium was complaining that it was the most expensive experiment he made ever. He had to pay the crew, the transportation, the chopper, and everything. And I can't believe that he could make such a fundamental mistake. But do you?
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, the guy is smart, but he's not perfect. He really didn't consider the aerodynamics involved. He didn't put a fin in. He made a mention during the video that he should have put a fin in, and he probably, it would have cost him too much to have it finished up so that it was front heavy, which would also help help to streamline it and lessen the amount of random chaotic tumbling that it underwent as it fell down, which made it more problematic to aim it at any place. So, you know, I mean, that's the way most science tends to be, trial and correction, and then try it again and correct, and So he, the only thing that he didn't do is he didn't try any of it out first. He just kind of ran with an idea, and it didn't quite work out. I mean, you know, probably because he spent that much money, he wasn't going to throw away the video, so he showed failure. But I enjoy what he does, and even if he doesn't succeed, there's a couple of good reasons to learn something from his failures as well.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
I'm going to drop a bomb here. If there's a timeline, it's not science. Period.
Would you like to expand upon that?
If you'll indulge me, I would. So the whether it has to do with some of these interesting shows that explore some scientific principles, which they're great, you know, when a guy gets out there with a welder in the car and crashes it and does all this crazy stuff, it's great stuff. But so often it is miserably failed, and the parallel to that is the Home Improvement shows, or there's lots of stuff in the entertainment stream. It's total BS, because it's all based on a timeline. Instead of, do we have the facts right, or we just don't have the facts right? It doesn't matter if we have the facts right or wrong, we just have to get it done by Tuesday. And science and the intellectual endeavor of figuring something out is not time dependent. Your wife will disagree, but it's just not. And I guess that's what I'm saying.
Okay, but you have to understand that this is not scientific research. This is science explanation and entertainment. So I take it from that. I don't expect Veritasium to invent a cost-effective method of nuclear fusion. The thing that I got out of it is the obvious aerodynamics involved in hurtling any kind of weapon from one place to another. Wesley is talking about as far as the drones. If you look at the video that he sent me, which you can't, there's no link anywhere to it, those grenades are relatively small objects. They have a very low surface area. They don't interact too much with wind speed, and they also are front-heavy designed and have fins on the back. So they're better designed for their purpose. Now, I don't know whether that was the first model that the Ukrainians came up with. My guess is it's somewhere in the middle of a long series of iterations. So again, I don't expect great research results from Veritasium. I expect to be primarily entertained and hopefully informed.
Fair enough. I only make the observation that when David slung the stone, he might not have been able to give you the equation, but he knew how the whole thing worked. And it's important that regular folk have an idea of as much as they can grasp of what we call science. And sometimes it's treated as removed for special people, and I would forward that it's not. Back to you, Ned.
Well, among other things, the purpose of this, Ned, is to disprove that belief. Science isn't for rocket scientists. Science should be for everyone. Everyone deserves to have a chance to understand the world around them as best they can. And we try it our own little way to do it here, and other places try it as well. There are flim-flammers around that make up stuff, and there are others that just popularize a very superficial appearance of science. But I believe science is for every single person. We all should kind of know how radios work. We all should kind of know how the lights work, all the things that we use. And the one thing that annoys the heck out of me is people who think that the concept of I plug it in, I turn it on, that's how it works, drives me insane.
I agree. Let's give it back to Wesley for a minute and see if we didn't derail him completely.
Yeah, actually, Veritasium
built a castle about 10 feet by 10 feet, maybe 20 by 20, from sand. So he delivered water to the desert. I believe it was Mogave Desert. They built that castle, and then after 5th or 10th try, they were able to hit into that castle, and they saw that 200 pounds weight was barely damaged, was able barely to damage that sand castle. So he was very much disappointed. I don't know if you saw it, Dr. Ray.
Yes, I did. He actually brought in some champion sandcastle builders to build him his castle. And unfortunately, because of the tumbling, he couldn't get the helicopter too high, because obviously the higher you place the helicopter, the more the strike zone varies. So in order to improve his risk of getting at the area that he wanted to hit, he had to elevate the heavy object much lower than he wanted, so it had far less potential energy, and because it was not aerodynamically designed, it tumbled, and so it didn't kind of go head first into the ground. And then because it was sand, it tended to just kind of drive itself underground without really affecting anything nearby. So sand is not quite the same as a building. You can go down sand without really affecting the surrounding sand. So probably building a sandcastle, although it was amusing, was probably not structurally the best choice either. So he had a whole bunch of really bad choices, but it was still entertaining.
Okay.
I got some for you, Wesley.
Coming back to the weaponry. So in 1960s, there was that idea of dropping from very, very high up a tungsten that would go to the bunker of some enemy and deeply damage the bunker. The bunker, right. So later on, DARPA decided that they want in 1965, they want to try to do it, and at the same time, Russian decide they want to build the weapon that has many of those very heavy tungsten rods, and they can actually, instead of dropping it, they can simply shoot it, so the rocket will have, instead of the explosives, will have a set of those rods, and at a certain point, those rods are going to spread and go to the direction they wanted it to send. And they find out that they don't know how to send it to the particular point. At the same time, Americans discovered that at such a high speed, it is very difficult to communicate with that glider if we could make it in the form of glider. By definition, hypersonic vehicles fly at more than five times the speed of sound and up to dozens times faster than jetliners. The warheads rise into the space at the traditional long-range missile, but then descends quickly into the atmosphere bank, and they're hard to maneuver. So then eventually the newest weaponry that America has is stubby gliders. They have a curved upper surface of their wedge-shaped bodies to give some of the lifting power of the airplane wing. So we see the transition. Let me drop. I'm not sure if I overtime. Okay. So DARPA decided to go. I was participating in DARPA programs in the beginning of 2000. There was active mine detection. But DARPA Falcon Hypersonic Technology of 832, HTV2. There was a program where unmanned rockets launch aircraft glides through the Earth atmosphere and at incredibly fast speed that would be about 13,000 miles per hour. So the time between New York and Los Angeles would be 12 minutes. That the vehicle would also send and collect data, but the problem they had was how to keep the communication with such fast moving vehicle that has to get hot. So they had a problem with critical guidance, navigation, and control. But that was in 2010 at April 22nd. They were trying to do that. So now, since Reagan time and the space weaponry in space, I don't know how much of that they put in space, if you know Dr. Roy. We have a weaponry where the rocket is lifting very high up some very heavy material, and then that material is dropping from that high elevation down and eventually exploding. Back to you.
Well, I certainly don't have the clearances to know what they were planning, building, and actually putting up, but not telling us anything about. I'm sure there's loads of those things. The Star Wars initiative was believed to be a disaster, a waste of money and a waste of time, of devices that were not technologically possible at that time. I don't know if they're even possible now. And believed, what I understand, is to be part of the reason why the Soviet Union fell. They found the need to compete against an imaginary technology that basically bankrupted them. So, all fascinating. I really love the name that I think the Defense Department gave to this technology. Apparently, somewhere, someplace, they called them Rods from God, which I think is a very apt name for them.
Yeah. There was plenty of such things. Right now, Russia is Russian claims are 90% their wishes and 10% of reality. And even that 10% of reality is eventually not finished yet. So they say they have hypersonic, I don't know how to call it, hypersonic, supersonic, talking about what, five Mach, six Mach. I'm not sure how to call it. So they say they had such a weaponry. They were trying similar weaponry in Ukraine when they attacked the shopping center, killing almost all people in that place. And they were pretty proud about it. So, yes, that's my 5 cents about that subject. Back to you.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
It's five times the speed of sound. That's what they... That's hyper... That's the hyper one. And it's Mark. We pronounce it Mark, Wesley. M-A-R-K. That's the way we pretty much pronounce it. So it's... Yeah, it looks like March, but it's Mark. Mark, you know. Back to you, Ryan.
Oh, by the way, the HTV-2 was 17 Mach. 17 Mach. Unbelievable. Then it was 2010. And no more information are available about it. Back to Space Report.
Why did China launch
spy balloon when they could have used satellites. Hello, David?
Hello, sir. KG2RY listening.
That's a very good question. Why balloon? Now, I have my own opinion, but because you're on board to right now, Wesley, if you have anything to say on the matter, feel free.
That was to me.
Yeah, I thought you'd like to answer the question. I'll put in my two cents as well.
KG2RY, follow up.
Okay, so we have a situation where an American diplomat was supposed to go to China, and it was for very good reason. At the same time, Chinese, knowing about it, decided to put the balloon with the spy equipment on it that would be flying over American territory. They could see from their spy satellites what they want to see. At the same time, they wanted to probably, at least what the rumor is, to see the military installation in Ohio area. What of that is true? I don't know. Dr. Roy.
Okay, I'll give you my two cents worth. I don't know if Chinese optical satellite technology is quite up to par with ours. You have to realize the ridiculously billions of dollars that are spent on this technology. I believe Trump released an image of Iran during his administration that showed satellite images with higher resolution than anyone knew existed, and that was from a satellite technology that at the time was 10 years old. So we probably have really good technology, probably a lot better than the Chinese. So by using weather balloons, you can get far closer. There's less atmospheric optical effects that you have to take care of. And also, they're able to track radio waves that are very difficult for satellites to actually be able to receive. And it's relatively low cost, and they've done it before. Apparently, the Defense Department has said that there have been at least three previous episodes of this happening during the previous administration.
That I know, and I believe you're right. But my question is, when America wants to talk to China about very important things, it happens that China sends a balloon that needs the time to go there to be noticed with the spy equipment on it. In the result, the American visit to China was canceled. The question is, I don't believe Chinese were so unsmart to not notice it. Was it on a purpose? Back to you.
The one that flew over the United States, China said it was a meteorological weather balloon. But they didn't say what the one that flew over South America, they didn't say what that was.
That's true, David, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the truth. China has this unfortunate tendency to lie about just about everything it does and says. They also said it was a civilian balloon, but I don't think there is any such thing as anything that's really civilian. Pretty much anything that happens with the approval of the CCP and the PLA. So, there's no such thing as civilian anything there. It's all linked with the military, linked with the government. It's all one happy family. There was another balloon in South America. It's just what they do. I don't think the United States is terribly afraid of the weather balloon security risk, but it's a political problem at this point. They have to do something about it or else they appear to be weak. So these are all shows. The Chinese are doing a show. We're doing a show. In the end, we have a lot better spy technology staring at them in China than they have staring at us in Brooklyn.
Well, you know, Vladimir Putin, the Russian, they announced, I think it must have been 2 months ago or so, they announced that they have a hypersonic nuclear missile that could go from where they are to the UK in less than 3 hours.
Yes, I heard the same thing. Let me make sure I have the repeater. Okay, I heard the same thing. Well, once again, Vladimir Putin lies a lot. A lot. A really big amount of things, he says, tend to be complete lies. I'm trying to be polite because of the FCC. Does he have hypersonic missiles? Yes, I believe he does. I don't think they're just generically hypersonic. I think for the most part they have to be launched on hypersonic planes, which is a little bit cumbersome. Do I think he has legitimate nuclear missiles on them? I don't think so. I think this is a tall tale. I tend to think that the Russian military has kept his nuclear weapons in the same shape that they've kept tanks and other things. Basically, they've let them to rot. Maintaining nuclear weapons is incredibly expensive. The United States spends billions of dollars a year fixing up their old nuclear warheads so that they're still working. I doubt that Russia has done most, if not any, of this stuff. Now, I don't want to test that theory. But generally speaking, I think if it's coming out of Putin's mouth, it's probably BS.
Well, you know, they're saying whatever those guys have, what we've got is a heck of a lot better.
Well, but in this case, it seems to me to be true. Take a look at your taxes and take a look at the budget given to the military. They're not spending them all on gold, $2 million space toilets. They're spending it on high technology weapons that we have no idea exist yet. I do not believe that research into weapons is done by incompetence in this country. We're throwing a lot of money at it, and we have a lot of clever people who can do incredible things with a lot of money. So, the military of the United States is larger than pretty much all the military elsewhere combined. It's expensive. We spend a lot of money. Some people would say we waste a lot of money on it, but I tend to believe in that. Call me semi-foolish. I don't know. But I do believe. I think Russia right now is ragtag. They're all thieves and scoundrels running it. They're stealing budgets away from maintenance to just buy yachts for themselves. And so they will reap what they have sown. When they started this war and they looked around for tanks, they could barely find any that moved. Their rations apparently expired years ago. Their army is in a mess. And I don't want to get political, but Russia tends to do war by just throwing a lot of human beings into it and not caring what happens to them. So hundreds of thousands of poor young Russians will die in this military attempt at glory that hopefully in the end will be a incredible failure.
Comment?
Yeah, sure. Jim, you want to comment?
Oh, I'd love to dive into this, but I'm going to stay at the periphery. I want to make a really important comment on the topic that we're talking about, which I love, but it has to do with ham radio and our decorum. Every syllable and word and burp and fart we make has to be identified by a call sign. Yet we can go, they say. Who the heck is they? And I think that we should be consistent in our decorum in that if we're going to say they say something, well, who is the they? And I want to hear it. I'm not saying I don't want to hear it. I just think we should be consistent in our decorum. And I'll send it back to Ned.
Okay, I didn't notice. Was I inconsistent?
Not at all.
Okay, very good. Anyway, I don't know who wants to talk next. Maybe David or maybe Wesley. You know, I mean, there's a lot of saber rattling that goes on. And some of it is legit. You know, occasionally people will tell you the truth just to confuse you. But I tend to believe in the inherent nature of government leaders to lie through their teeth.
Comment in one YDY.
Yes, YDY. Good to hear you, Hank.
Well, getting back to the CCP and what they do, if we look at just how quickly they are building ships to combat not just the United States but also Japan, it's pretty amazing and alarming at the same time.
Yes, I agree with you completely. They are slowly creeping into neutral waters and declaring it Chinese. They're populating very small little islands that they said they would not militarize, and militarizing them. They are looking for war. They are looking to be the primary world power. They think they have a chance. Xi Jinping is the principal architect, I feel, of this. In previous administrations, they tended to hide their strength, and they benefited greatly economically and diplomatically. They decided to pull the Band-Aid off and show the fierceness of the Chinese people, and things haven't been the same. And the world kind of loathes and despises China. They suspect them of everything. Their businesses, manufacturing, is going through a difficult time, and when the dust settles, there might be a lot of businesses that run from China and go to other places in the Far East or even India and Pakistan.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
It must have been two and a half, three months ago. President Joe Biden made a statement about computer microchips, that they can be assembled and manufactured in the United States, and high-end computer microchips for cars and air conditioners and other devices.
Yes, there is a company called TSMC, principally located in Taiwan, who is presently the technological leader in the field of latest technology semiconductors, different materials, different geometries, smaller size components. And they are out of stock because of COVID and the weirdness of demand. That's what drove the car industry prices up. They decided that during COVID they weren't going to sell that many cars, so they let go of their spot on the foundries. Then they discovered that they were selling more cars, but the foundry spots were already taken. And generally, there's a scarcity of very high-end semiconductors, again, that are located primarily in Taiwan, to a lesser degree in South Korea. China does not have that type of technology yet, hopefully won't for a while. And so, because of the scarcity and because of nationalism, it was decided that the United States needs to have their own foundry. So TSMC is building a foundry, and other companies are building silicon semiconductor foundries in the United States and investing billions of dollars. What that will probably lead to is a glut in semiconductors, and memory prices and graphic boards will drop in price. That's good for us, but not terribly good for the semiconductor companies. But yeah, there is a strategic need for high-end semiconductor foundries because they are kind of the steel that, you know, what steel was for World War II, high-end semiconductors might be for World War III, God forbid.
VHD with a redirect.
Sure, feel free.
Oh, you might regret this one. So apparently there's a thing called quantum computing. And then some of the things we've been talking about for the last few moments might lead in that direction. Most people probably don't know that there's actually a government website, www.quantum.gov. It deals with the quantum, National Quantum Initiative. It's a thing. I don't know what the heck it means. Can anybody here enlighten me on what that means? I really have no clue.
Quantum computing is a different type of computer that is optimized for particular needs. It's not going to be able to run your cell phone or your desktop. It requires cryogenic temperatures because you are quantum entangling particles and producing interesting things called quantum bits, called qubits, which regular bits are either one or zero. You know, they're binary. Qubits or quantum bits are in a quantum unstable state. They're everything. So the idea is there are some algorithms that can use a quantum bit to express a very complicated equation, like the factoring of two prime numbers, which is the basis for encryption across the world. Those things, if you get it right and you have enough qubits, can be solved relatively quickly with a quantum computer that would take an eternity to be solved with a standard computer, that even a supercomputer that we can use with regular technology.
I'm not greatly smart, but I'm not completely dumb. I still have no idea what that means. I really am lost. I get the idea of quantum interconnection and stuff that we don't understand. But what? Apparently, there's people that know how to do stuff that we don't really grasp. Am I missing something?
The concept of a quantum computer is so fundamentally obtuse and obscure that there are people to this day arguing that the devices being sold and being manufactured and being demonstrated are not really quantum computers. So that gives you a small taste, hopefully, of the vagueness of all of this. Again, it requires understanding how quantum entanglement works and how in quantum mechanics, things are not ones and zeros. Things are multiple values simultaneously. The fancy word is a superposition. So an object has a almost infinite number of superpositions at the same time that can then drop down to a single position. And it's that characteristic of quantum computers that allow you to solve very, very complicated mathematical algorithms. Now again, they're suited for very specific types of solutions, very, very specific types of algorithms. You can't use them as a generic computer because they wouldn't work efficiently for those purposes. I don't know what to tell you. Like I said, there are some people who will argue with each other whether that device is really a quantum computer or just a bunch of electronics with some liquid helium cooling it down.
Sounds a lot like alchemy to me. We have this thing that we don't know how it works, but it works. So we just, I get the ones and zeros. I don't know how to manipulate them. I learned it back when it was crude and rude. I'm lost. I'm lost in this day and age.
Well, it's not unusual. I mean, one of the great quotes from Richard Feynman, Nobel laureate and Far Rockaway citizen, was if you think that you know quantum mechanics, you don't know quantum mechanics. It is incredibly non-intuitive. It is highly probabilistic, And the more you get into it, the less it makes any sense in the world. We've evolved to deal with the macroscopic world. The macroscopic world does not relate well to the quantum realm of very, very, very small subatomic particles. What we perceive as reality is starts out as those quantum fluctuations, but they resolve in the macro large frame as things that we know and love and take for granted. You know, walls are solid. There's no empty space in a wall, except if you understand how atoms are oriented. Most solids are 99.9% empty space by volume, and that's a simple concept. It gets hairier and weirder as you go deeper down the rabbit hole.
So, if you're certain of something, you're probably wrong, is what you're saying. I know it's an oversimplification that spreads it across all realms of thought and conversation. But that's the gist of it.
Well, I mean, that's an adage of wisdom. You know, there's someone who has some quote that unfortunately I can't pluck out of my brain, the educated are full of doubt, while the ignorant are absolutely positively sure of everything. That goes back to what I said earlier tonight, where I perceive a degree of wisdom in learning how much you don't know about something.
Yes, I think what you the quote is, a fool is sure of everything, a wise man is always wondering. And I don't know who said it, but back to you, because this is good stuff, going into the complicated world. You take it where you want. Happy to be here.
Okay, I mean, we could always use a doubter, and as I said before, although I think most major organizations agree that quantum computers are real things, doing real things, with limited degree of success so far, because there are a great deal of technological speed bumps. For some functions, you need a certain number of entangled particles in order to get the numbers to work out. But most people kind of think that quantum computers are real things. But, you know, up until a few years ago, we had some very bright people here on the technical net that sort of thought that quantum entanglement was just a fart, just an excuse for how things work. And I tried to explain that it's actually able to be tested in a college lab. A lot of college labs do experiments based on quantum entanglement, so it's a real thing. Two guys, I think, won Nobel Prizes just this past year based on their understanding of quantum entanglement. So they're all real things, although they don't make a great deal of sense. They suggest that you do not have to be in the same place to have an effect on something. It's called non-locality, which drives me crazy. I tend to like the things to be local. You can't have an effect on something that you're not near or able to extend some kind of field or energy to get there. But apparently, the universe is a non-local phenomenon.
If I understand it correctly, I'm going to grossly oversimplify the thing. I can hold a thing in my right hand and a thing in my left hand that are quantumly linked. And if I rotate the thing in my right hand 3 degrees to the right and 4 degrees to the forward, the left one can duplicate that. Again, grossly simplified. And that is a thing that is exploited in this whole thought process. If that is true, then everything we think that we know is probably just a, I don't know what, it's just a piece of what is there. A very small piece. Back to you, Roy.
You have a choice for relationships. It's complicated. There are some theoreticians that construct the concept of a theoretical wormhole connecting those two objects closer together outside of space itself. In some way, you have to kind of deal with the fact that even though two things... Now, you could take one of those objects and you could move it to the other side of the solar system. And supposedly, the instant that you manipulate your first object, the second object will be equally manipulated. And that seems to compound the theory of relativity, in that no cause and effect can happen faster than at the speed of light. But with quantum entanglement and non-locality, it suggests it can. You can't get the information inside of those entanglements to go faster than the speed of light, but you can have the action at a distance happen faster than the speed of light. I hope none of this is giving anyone a headache.
That we know of.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
I think about it this way. You know, you can get all your knowledge from the book. You know, you can read words on the internet, and the perception of the world is whatever it is, then there might be something else, some other thing, something to do with perception and consciousness. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I understand what you're trying to say. I don't believe in supernatural. I believe in the natural. I think ultimately all answers come from the natural. When you start to introduce the supernatural, they can violate so many non-falsifiable concepts that they're kind of meaningless, and you're just making stuff up. By the way, KC2SHO, John from Los Alamos, unfortunately can't talk with us tonight because the IRLP link is acting a little weird, but he's in the chat room, and he mentions that at Los Alamos they're doing a lot of quantum computation research. Just if anyone's interested, you can read what John is writing in the chat room. Just type in chat.ac2gs.com.
Tell me, does SpaceX have spy satellites in them?
I do not know, and I probably would never know, and you would never know, because if they do, then part of the deal would be not to tell you or me. So there's a lot of spy satellites being launched. I do not know if SpaceX specifically is in charge of any of them or how many of them, but I am willing to bet you anything that there are spy satellites that are being designed, that are being built, that are being launched, and that are circling as we speak.
QSO, is there a major difference between private companies who own spy satellites and or government that owns spy satellites?
I tend to think, and I guess it's all in what you mean by spy satellite, that I think the government would not like for private industry to own spy satellites. Now, they might offer high-resolution imaging technology for a fee, and that would probably have some limitations of who their customers might be. But dollar for dollar, the people that own most, if not all, of the, quote, spy satellites probably are government entities. And we probably own more than all the other countries combined, because that's just the way our military budget rolls.
Well, SpaceX is really big. SpaceX, the people of SpaceX, they're planning to make a huge change in the internet.
Well, again, we kind of fall into these are words that comes out of Elon Musk. And if you think that Vladimir Putin lies, you ain't heard nothing when it comes to Elon. Elon is the guy who suggested that there would be autopiloting cars in 2016. And in 2018, you should buy a Tesla because no other car made sense. You could make $30,000 every year as using your Tesla to be an autopiloted taxi and just keep on making money. So that's what you get from Elon. So I would take any prediction of SpaceX with a grain of salt, if not a 10-pound sack of it. It's a viable company. It does make rockets. They do go places. They ain't going to the moon anytime too soon, no matter what Elon says about it. But nevertheless, so it's very possible that the military contracted with them to launch spy satellites. But again, you won't know about it, and I won't know about it.